And good morning. This is Coffee Table on KBBI AM 890 Homer and KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. I'm Shady Grove Oliver, and this week on Coffee Table, we're doing Kids at the Library. I have with me here today Claudia Haynes. She's the Youth Services Librarian at the Homer Public Library, and Rebecca Barnick, Children's Librarian at the Kenai Community Library. Welcome, Claudia and Rebecca.
Thanks for having us.
Hi.
Hi there. Of course. So first of all, I'd kind of like to get to know both of you a little bit. So I'm curious, Claudia, why did you decide to become a children's librarian?
I actually got hooked on libraries throughout my life, but I was involved in the capital campaign to build what we still refer to as the new library. And after 4 years of working on that project and working on programs in the library, I took a break to be with my kids, who are now 10 and 11. And I just couldn't give it up. And so I decided to go back and get my master's in library science and get back in the library.
And Rebecca, how about you?
Well, I started in libraries when I was in college as a work study. And after I graduated, kind of thinking, you know, what do I want to do now that I, you know, am a graduate, I decided to pursue the library science field. And one of my first jobs after getting my master's was working in the youth services department. And after that, I decided working with children was the way to go.
Well, that's very interesting. Now, just a note here, Claudia will only be with us for the first half of the show because actually she has to go and do story time at the library. What ages are you going to be reading to this morning?
You know, during the summer, we turn our preschool story time actually into a family story time. So most of the kids are between the ages of 3 and 7, but anyone's welcome.
And listeners, we'd love to hear from you. It's a local call in Homer at 235-7721 or toll-free 1-800-979-5224 if you'd like to give us your thoughts on libraries. So Claudia, we're going to jump right into this. I know that something you're particularly interested in is using technology in the library. So could you tell us a little bit about what technologies you've instituted in the children's program and at the Homer Library?
And sure, and maybe before I start talking about specific technologies, maybe I'll tell you a little bit about how I kind of came to this philosophy. You know, Rebecca and I both lead story times and programs for kids. And in, say, a story time, part of what we do is read it, what we call reader advisory, where we pick books that we think are great and we share them with families to kind of highlight those books. We also use books and activities and songs and art projects that extend that experience to kind of work off of the value, that early literacy value of those books and activities. And, you know, mobile devices, technology in households has exponentially grown. If you walk around town, you'll see everybody with some sort of mobile device or cell phone, or they have a computer, or they come to the library. And so it's a very natural progression for librarians to kind of work off of that and say, you know, not only can we recommend paper books, but we can recommend digital books, digital music, story apps, toy apps. And so I kind of see our role as librarians actually as media mentors. And so we can help families connect with high quality technology, high quality digital content that has an early literacy value or has kind of a, you know, it's high interest or high quality, just like we recommend books. And then, you know, also kind of integrate that either into story time or the library experience.
Okay. And Rebecca, up there at the Kenai Library, I'm sure you have some programs up there as well. Have you noticed that children's experiences of reading have changed as technology has increased in the library?
Oh, absolutely. One thing we have at the Kenai Library is the Listen Alaska website where you can download ebooks, audiobooks, and I have quite a few parents now that will ask me about, you know, how to get Listen Alaska on their iPod or ebooks, their Kindle, and they love being able to give the ebook to their children that has a children's book that, you know, the kids love using the technology. It's great.
Claudia, I'm wondering, you know, when I was a kid, I remember I'd go and there was the card catalog and I loved flipping through that card catalog. And I talked to my librarians a lot because I often couldn't figure something out or I couldn't find something in the catalog. Have you noticed that there's been a change in your interactions with kids as technology, as kids are becoming more independent with that technology?
You know, I love kids who can navigate the library independently. They can come in and find what they need. But sometimes we just need to talk to each other. And the library has really, you know, particularly the children's library here in Homer is a boisterous place. People are talking. And in fact, with technology, whether it's apps or websites or games or whatnot, I really like technology that keeps kids and families talking. We call that joint media engagement. And so anytime I recommend technology, that's what I'm looking for. You know, in this afternoon, if you come by the library, you know, we have 6 computers in the kids' library, and those kids, whether they're playing Minecraft or some other game, they're all talking. It's a loud place, and I love that, and I love interacting with them, whether it's helping them find a book or navigating those websites or whatnot.
And callers, we'd love to hear from you. Again, it's a local call in Homer at 235-7721 or toll free 1-800-979-5224. Tell us about the ways that your kids use technology in the library or at home. And Claudia, what are some of the programs that you have going that use technology at the Homer Library?
Well, we integrate, you know, I try to integrate technology in a variety of programs because kids use technology as if, you know, they use digital technology as if they use anything. And so they're able to navigate back and forth. And so in our programs, we try to do that. Sometimes I'll use apps in story time on an iPad. We don't have a large screen, so there's some formats that don't work. I've recently used what is known as a Makey Makey, which is basically a circuit board. And I brought that to story time and another program to teach kids about electricity. And it's very cool. And let's see, we've used games, we build robots.
You build robots.
We did. We built just a couple weeks ago, one of our Maker Monday programs for older kids, we built robots out of the heads of toothbrushes and little batteries.
That must have been a good time.
Oh, it was great.
So these apps that you're talking about in story time, how do you use those apps in story time? I'm trying to picture this in my head.
You know, some apps work great in story time and some are best just explored one-on-one. One app, which is probably surprising, but not to the families that come to story time, is Keynote. Sometimes if there are images of, say we did a program on simple machines, to demonstrate what simple machines are that we don't have at the library, I brought pictures and also say the word pulley would be on that so they could see that text has meaning, which is an early literacy skill, and see the image. Other apps, we've used some of the apps by a developer called Toca Boca, which is an awesome developer who gets how kids play. We've built robots in a game, color games, stories. There's a story app called Harry McCleary in Donaldson's Dairy, which is a really fun app to read.
So. It seems like it's really expanding the experience of the library. It's not just going in, reading a book, or perhaps participating in a craft fair, things that I can remember from my own childhood. It seems like there's this whole new world of integrating, you know, music and television and internet and sight and sound and everything into this story time experience. What do you feel about that?
You know, I think we're really at the beginning of what digital technology can provide as an opportunity in the library. And we're just starting to get into not just consuming digital media, but actually creating content, which is kind of what we're doing at the library. You walk around, and it's not just kids, but adults are starting businesses, they're writing books, they're actually creating things. And in the kids section, it's just more obvious. And so there's another app called the Sock Puppet app, which is a free app. And it really takes sock puppets and you narrate the story and multiple kids can work together. And even some places are using it to teach traditional languages because you can record the narration and tell the story, and you can share the puppet show that you've made as an app. And so that's what I like, is not just, you know, playing a game or whatnot, but actually sharing your story and kids being able to tell everyone what they're about.
And Rebecca, I'd like to ask you about some of the older kids, say the middle schoolers, the high schoolers, and their relationship with new ways of experiencing the library. What have you found up there in Kenai?
Well, I found they definitely like to use technology. A lot of them will come in with their own computers now, and you want to talk to us about, you know, what websites are out there, you know, what apps are cool, that type of a thing. You know, I have to say I haven't used apps like Claudia has in Storytime or things like that.
Has that made your job more difficult? Because it sounds like your jobs are also expanding with this technology away from just books, where you now have to know the websites to navigate. You have to know the different pages that these kids can go to where they can also find information. How has that changed your job?
Oh, it makes it more difficult when you have kids that come up and ask you about a particular website or a technology that you've never heard of, or maybe heard of once or twice, and they want help using it or more information. So you're kind of stuck stumbling around a little bit, and you know, they're asking you challenging questions. So it is really hard to kind of try and stay one step ahead of the technology game.
I imagine it's hard to stay one step ahead of kids with technology just in general. I know even I had trouble doing it. I worked as a nanny for a while, and those kids knew way more about their phones than I ever would. Now, Claudia, I want to turn to just good old kids' books. I see you've got a stack of them here. Tell me about a few of those books you've got there.
Well, I spend a lot of time with picture books. I work with kids. Like Rebecca, I work with kids from 0 up to 18. But the picture books that I brought with me, I started picking out books that I absolutely love, and there are so many. But a couple, maybe I'll start with a couple board books that are great for young children, actually were published by a group called Best Beginnings, which is a statewide early literacy group. And what's great about these books is that they reflect the Alaska kid experience. And picture books and books for all ages have all different values. But I like books that show kids their own environment, or show them an experience they can relate to, or show them what's possible. And so this one is called Our Alaska Family. And it's just a picture book, but it has Alaskan kids, and kids from Homer or kids throughout the state can see kids that look like them doing all sorts of things that babies and toddlers do.
So this is a board book with actual photographs of children in it. So it's not illustrations. It's actually photographs of kids smiling and sucking on their fingers. And that's very interesting.
And wordless books are a great fit for parents or caregivers and kids, because they can make up their own story. There's not a dictated text that they have to follow through. And particularly young kids can just, the board book pages are heavy, they're almost indestructible, and kids can look through them. And, you know, I'm all about reading with children from the day they're born. That's how kids become great readers, and then the world is their oyster, as they say. And so this gets kids comfortable with books, helps them learn how to use books in a fun way.
Absolutely. And something that I've always been fascinated by is the relationship between art and the words in children's books. I mean, some children's literature has the most amazing artwork. How do you feel like that adds to that? That it's like a complete package.
Complete package is a perfect way to put it. I was at a conference a few years ago where Marla Frazee, who is an illustrator and an author, she said that a great picture book is a marriage between text and art and the illustrations. And if it's a great picture book, you can't take out the pictures, you can't take out the text. And that's what I look for. And even in story time, I'll stop often and point out to kids, look at these illustrations, look at what they add to the story. Yeah, I totally agree.
Rebecca, what are some of the more popular books for younger kids that you've got there? What are people checking out?
Well, a couple I brought with me. One of them is Flight School by Lita Judge. I have another one called Boom's Not Twitty by Doreen Cronin. And another one that's really popular right now is This Is a Moose by Richard Morris. You know, I find that kids absolutely gravitate towards the books with the beautiful pictures, the bigger the pictures, the better, the more colorful.
Describe This Is a Moose for us.
Oh, this is one of my favorites too. It's illustrated by Tom Lichtenheld, who's absolutely one of my favorite illustrators. It talks about a moose who's supposed to be the subject of a nature film, but the moose has other ideas, which include going to the moon. So as you can imagine, the director of the nature film is not happy with the moose's performance, and it is a hilarious book about how the moose gets his other animal friends to help him get to the moon.
And Rebecca, the way that Claudia was talking about the Let's Talk Alaska books, the Best Beginnings books, why do you think it's important for kids to, say, read books that have moose in them or that have sea otters or that have Alaskan illustrations? What does that do for children?
I think it helps them to connect with the state they live in, our beautiful state of Alaska. It introduces them to the wildlife that they have, you know, outside their back door.
And what do you look for in children's books when you're looking for the art and the literature? What's some of your favorite types of artwork for children?
Ooh, the ones that have the beautiful illustrations, you know, the color that they use, going more than the black and white illustrations you might have seen in books that were published a long time ago. An interesting storyline that will capture the kids' attentions, and I really like the ones that have humor in it that also will grab the parents' interest, you know, because it's important to have books that the parents want to read out loud too.
That's an interesting point. And I've noticed that there's a lot of kids' books and young adult literature that definitely have those double meanings where the parents will gain a completely different story than the kids. And I feel like that also helps those books grow with the family. And as the kids get older, they can start to learn more from those books and understand the double meanings. Claudia, what is that book you just pulled out there?
So I pulled out a book called Happy Pig Day by Mo Willems. And if families out there don't know Mo Willems yet, they should come to the library, because Mo Willems is not only popular, but he really injects humor into his books. He's both the author and the illustrator. And as I'm showing Shady right now, in this book, which is what we call a beginning reader book, it's not a picture book, but it gets kids started on reading more advanced books. He's really an expert at using white space. And so on this particular book, in this particular page, all we have is a gray cartoon elephant and a little pink pig and little text bubbles. But he's able to express so much more with the facial expressions of the pig. And this book I've actually read in story time. And at one point, it's all about a pig day, and pig is very special. And at one point, the elephant is starting to feel very left out because he's not a pig. And they encounter all these pigs who are celebrating pig day. And he gets really sad because they're best friends. And at one point, I actually thought the kids were going to cry from the illustrations. They had this just horrible fear that this was going to end their friendship. And what ends up happening is the pigs actually take off their costumes, and they're all sorts of animals. And so elephant is brought into the celebration. But he's funny. He's written just a lot of books, and he just really gets kids' humor, and they're fun books to read.
Absolutely. The illustrations on that are very interesting because they're very simple. They have a lot of color to them, but they're very, very simple. They're sort of like line outline drawings. But he does, he changes the expressions on the face, changes the shape of the thought bubbles into hearts or stars so that it really changes the meanings behind the words inside them. That's very interesting. I'd like to hear about this book on Nelson Mandela. The illustration on the front of that, it's a beautiful picture of Nelson Mandela. What is this book, and what's the function of these history children's books, I guess?
This book is called Nelson Mandela, and it's by an author-illustrator named Kadir Nelson. And Kadir is he's won multiple awards, and part of the reason for that is he is able to draw portraits or paint portraits that are so expressive, you know, and the fact that the entire cover of this large picture book is Nelson Mandela's face is a testament to that. And in fact, these portraits that he paints are actually large format paintings that he then turns into picture books. And he's well known for biographies and nonfiction titles. And he often works with other authors, but he actually just finished a picture book that is not about a particular individual. Well, it's about a bear, a little black bear. And that's kind of his first foray into picture books. But they, again, not only offer some kids a reflection of their own life, but present important people and important moments in history in a kid-friendly format. And that's really important. You know, there's a lot of interest in kids nonfiction these days, in school and out of school, and a lot of kids come to books through biographies or nonfiction. That's really what drives them and what connects them with reading. And so it's good to have authors and illustrators who provide more options for kids.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that's quite interesting, is that when you talk about adult books, you generally do talk about nonfiction and fiction books. But with kids' books, I know, at least on the outside, I'm sure as librarians, both of you make this distinction every day. But for me, I hadn't even thought about the fact that there's nonfiction, there's fiction books. Rebecca, up there, are there any of those historical books that you can think of that you found have really captivated kids? Because of their stories or because of the way that they've been told?
Ooh, you know, I guess what comes to mind is children really like biographies of historical figures. I find the newer biographies that we get checked out quite a bit, because children really do want to learn about, Martin Luther King Jr. or Albert Einstein. And I think they really like when they can, you know, go to the library and they ask me, you know, I want a book about Albert Einstein, and, you know, I can show them what we have, and they get to pick the one that they want, and they'll go in a corner and they'll, you know, read about these famous people. They love nonfiction books.
Huh. Now, Claudia, I know you have to get going in just over 5 minutes that you can go to story time. What will you be reading today? Do you know?
I do know. We're actually doing a story time on construction. And there is a very sweet little book that we're going to read. And this is a little foreshadowing for everybody coming to story time. It's called Iggy Peck Architect. And it's a rhyming story about this little boy who, from when he was very little, is a builder. And it's a story about how he designs things, builds things. And when he gets to school, he meets a teacher who had a terrifying experience high in a building and doesn't want to talk about any building, doesn't let the kids build. And it's a very sad part of the story, but it ends well because he saves the day with his building skills. So the rhyming text is nice because it helps kids hear the ending sounds of words, which helps them as they learn to become readers. And then I'm also going to be reading a version of The Three Little Pigs, which is also about construction and building. And then I have a couple others. We're going to be building with cardboard boxes, building with Legos, doing all sorts of building activities today.
That sounds like a lot of fun. Again, local call in Homer here, 235-7721, or toll-free 1-800-979-5224. We would love to hear from you about what your kids are reading, what kind of technology they're using, or what kind of programs you look for in a library for your kids. Now, Claudia, while we still got you here, I would love to have you read from one of these books. I'd love to hear you read. I think it's a wonderful experience to have a children's librarian read to you, and I've missed that as I've gotten older. So what will you be reading today?
I'm going to read from a book called Oh No by Candace Fleming and Eric Roman. Candace Fleming is a very seasoned author, and the illustrations feature a tiger and a bamboo forest and some other animals. And the first page starts, "Frog fell into a deep, deep hole. Ribbit, oops, frog fell into a deep, deep hole. Ribbit, oops." And Frog has certainly fallen into a very deep hole that he cannot get out of. "Frog fell into such a deep hole, he couldn't get out to save his soul," croaked Frog. "Help! Help! I can't get out!" "Oh no." And there's a tiger sleeping nearby the top of the hole. Mouse came along, but what could she do? "Pippa eek! Pippa eek!" Mouse came to help, but what could she do? "Pippa eek!" Mouse was so small, what could she do? She tried reaching down, and she fell into. Squeaked Mouse, "We're trapped! We can't get out! Oh no!" And this book is lovely, and a series of animals come to try and help the frog and the mouse and other animals that fall in, and eventually the tiger comes to help. And of course, all the animals are terrified of the tiger. And eventually, the animals do get out, and the tiger falls into the story. But it's nice because the patterns and the text repeat, and so the kids quickly get into the story and can anticipate what comes next. And there's just, like on this page, there's the top portion of the double page spread, they call this, is just a bamboo forest. And you can just see the top of the hole with a text bubble that comes out and says, "Oh no." So this is a very fun one to read aloud.
Absolutely. And something that stands out to me about this book are the sounds like "pippa eek" and things like that, completely made up words, but that you can see capture kids' imaginations.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Claudia, thank you so much for being with us today. We're going to take a quick break. As you remember, the phone number is here, local and Homer, 235-7721, or toll-free 1-800-979-5224. Keep those in mind for when we return, and then we'll be spending some more time with Rebecca, find out what she's reading, maybe hear her read some excerpts as well. But Claudia Haynes, children's librarian at the Homer Public Library, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, and it was nice to share the show with you, Rebecca.
Nice to meet you.
Thank you.
And welcome back, everyone. This is The Coffee Table on KBBI AM 890 Homer and KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. I'm Shady Grove Oliver, and again, this week on Coffee Table, we're talking about kids at the library. And in the last half hour, we had Claudia Haynes here. She's the Youth Services Librarian at the Homer Public Library, but she had to go. She's actually doing story time this morning at the library. But we've still got with us Rebecca Barnick. She's the Children's Librarian at the Kenai Community Library. Welcome back, Rebecca.
Hi.
Hi there. So with you, I would like to move more into the realm of young adult literature and YA literature. I know that's something that you're passionate about. So can you tell us some of the books that you are reading right now?
Well, the one that I'm currently reading is called The One by Kiara Cass. It's in the Selection series, so some of you may have heard it. It's a part of the dystopian genre that's really popular right now. So it focuses on 35 girls that are picked for the selection, which is they're girls that come from non-royal backgrounds, and they're competing for the chance to marry the prince of a country called Alea. And it deals with learning what it's like to be royalty, the competition for the prince's heart. And it focuses on the main character, America Singer, and her struggle with remembering her background coming from a poor family and struggling to understand what it would mean to be a royal or a princess if she was picked.
And what drew you to that book?
I really like dystopian genre, and it had some good reviews on Amazon when I was searching for books, and I picked it up, and I was hooked after the first chapter.
Absolutely, and this dystopian literature really, it does seem to be gaining in popularity. I would say some of the masters of the dystopian novel, and I want to see if you agree with me on this, have been like Ursula K. Le Guin and Roald Dahl, and also I know Lois Lowry with The Giver, which is about to be made into a movie. I'm very curious to see how they're going to do that. Mm-hmm. But it really seems like those were sort of the start of this dystopian trend. Why do you think people are attracted to that nowadays?
I think they're attracted to it because of what's going on in today's society. The author of The Hunger Games, for example, I believe she got her idea for the book from watching the news and seeing the wars going on around the world and how that was affecting children, and taking those two concepts and making it into a book. It's just something that people seem to gravitate towards, those ideas of maybe fighting Big Brother, and these ideas where, a government or some organization is trying to control your life. And, people don't want their lives controlled.
And it seems like this definitely has been trickling down into children's and young adult literature more. I mean, we had 1984, Animal Farm, Brave New World in adult literature, starting as early as the 50s. But now it does seem like those trends are trickling down into YA literature. The Hunger Games is an interesting example because I think it is one of the most visibly violent young adult books that I've read personally, the series, and I know that caused a bit of controversy. How do you feel about that, about the trend toward young adult literature becoming more more realistic and more honest about violence?
There is a lot of controversy with that right now in YA literature. Some feel that the people who are reading these books are old enough to deal with that, while others do still feel that, teenagers, these young adults, are a little bit too young to deal with those concepts. You'll find that a lot of adults really like reading young adult literature, and I think that's why they're coming out with books that have some, pretty graphic scenes. You know, another book that comes to mind is The Legend series by Marie Lu, and that one has some graphic parts in the book, not quite as bad as The Hunger Games, but you're definitely noticing that as books are coming out.
Yeah, it really seems like, you know, in reading The Hunger Games, my own experience of it, I read it when I was in graduate school, and I was doing a lot of studies on trauma at that time, and it really seems like reading The Hunger Games, you're experiencing trauma through the eyes of Katniss, and it's a fascinating experience, but if you're not prepared for it, it definitely can take you by surprise sometimes with some of the very graphic things that happen, and I think for that reason, it translates well into film. And I'm wondering if you see a connection between the more graphic books and even the genre of graphic novels as kids are playing more video games, things like that. And not a judgment on those on that media, but I wonder if there's a connection there.
I think so. I mean, you look at Divergent that just came out. That one also has some graphic scenes. And that seems to have translated well into a movie. You know, as far as graphic novels, I think there's something to that, too, to be said that, you know, video games, you know, you always hear the controversy that they're too violent or, you know, they're showing that bad behaviors are okay, and you are seeing some of those topics creeping up in books now that are leading to these more graphic books.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the books, The Giver that I mentioned earlier, I believe it's by Lois Lowry, and that was a book that came out, I want to say in the late 80s or early 90s, I'm not exactly sure when it came out, but that is being turned into a film right now. And it seems as though they've aged the characters and put more technology into the film. And I'm wondering, what do you think the relationship is between books, either past or present, and how do they keep current? How do they keep current as times and technology change so quickly?
Oh, that's a good question. I think as they pick topics that are relevant to today's youth, you know, it may be a hard subject like suicide. That's, you know, something that is creeping up more and more in YA literature. Other topics may be, you know, dealing with a parent that's, you know, gone to war and come back and is now dealing with, you know, PTSD. It's finding those topics that you're hearing about in the news and putting them in a story that's relatable to, you know, children, young adults, adults.
And again, you are listening to The Coffee Table. If you'd like to call up and let us know what you're reading, if you are an adult who enjoys reading young adult literature, I know I'm one. If you are one, to tell us what you're reading, it's a local call in Homer, 235-7721, or toll-free, 1-800-979-5224. I'm here with Rebecca Barning, children's librarian at the Kenai Community Library. Now, Rebecca, I have a question for you about suicide in children's literature. It is a very difficult topic. How do you present that topic to kids and to parents?
With sensitive topics like that, you do get parents that will ask you if they think it's appropriate for that child. And, you know, that's a really hard question to answer. And a lot of times I'll tell the parent, you know, if you have any doubt that the book may not be appropriate, you take it home and read it first, look through it, because ultimately the parent knows what is best for their own child. And they seem to agree with that, and I've been thanked before for telling parents to read the book before they give it to their children, so that way they know what's in it. They know if there might be some passages that may be a little bit too hard to understand, and they can be prepared to explain, you know, topics in the book that so that way their children can understand it better.
Do you ever have kids coming to you to ask about difficult subjects that they've encountered in books?
Sometimes. I get a lot of, you know, there's bad language in this book. or maybe there's a paragraph that did talk about something they felt was inappropriate that we, you know, didn't pick up on. And they will come tell you. Children are very honest in how they feel. And I like that. It's good to know what books we have out there and how they're affecting our patrons, whether they like them or they felt that it was offensive, or hopefully they really liked a book and they'll tell us too on the other end of that spectrum.
Absolutely. With the older kids, do you find them gravitating toward Alaskan specific novels or books by Alaskan authors as well? In the same way that I know there's a lot of children's books that are Alaska specific, even like Mama, Do You Love Me and the Alaskan ABCs. Do you find the older kids going toward those as well?
Not really. They seem to go towards what's popular, what you see on Amazon or websites such as Goodreads that recommend different types of books. You know, we do try to highlight Alaskan authors or books that may have Alaska as a main topic, but I definitely find that they like the more popular books.
So how do you go and design your summer reading programs to make them applicable for all different ages? What kinds of things do you consider?
You know, it definitely is hard when you have an age range from, you know, zero to, you know, middle school. We just, you know, kind of take a look at what, you know, the different reading levels will be, and how do you incorporate a program that will make everyone feel comfortable, that will make everyone feel accomplished in their reading. You know, because you want children of all ages to feel to be happy that they're part of your reading program, that they're getting something out of it.
What kinds of programs do you have going on this summer for kids of different ages up at the Kenai Community Library?
Well, on Thursdays, we have our summer reading craft that's based on the Fizzboom Read theme. So it's a science theme. And actually, this Thursday, we're going to be making oobleck, which I think will be really fun and really messy. All the crafts that we're doing on Thursdays are part of the science theme. So next week we're going to do crafts on famous scientists. And then the Thursday after that, we're going to be doing a craft called From Horn Books to iPads to talk about the evolution of books from when they started out as a horn book to the iPads and the ebooks that we have now.
Why did you decide to do that topic, to look at the change over time?
I think kids have a natural interest in learning about what books may have looked like from the past. I know I did. You know, a lot of them don't realize that books always weren't, you know, what you see now, that they've changed through time, and especially now with ebooks, you know, which kids absolutely love. I want to, you know, show them what other books looked like in the past and what other kids in different times had to read.
When I think of a book, I definitely think of something that I can hold in my hand, flip the pages. It has that new book smell. How do you define a book? Is it included in an e-reader? Is that a book to you? What is a book?
To me, a book can be something that you hold in your hand to an e-reader. It's actually a very sensitive topic in library school right now, whether you like the old-fashioned book in your hand or the e-book. Some people are very, you know, very, very black and white, that the only thing they will read is a book that you can turn the page. But to me, a book is, you know, anything that you put in your hand and has a story.
Now, I know you have some books up there with you. I was wondering if you could choose to choose one of them and just kind of do the same thing that Claudia did. I'd love to hear you read a passage from a book that you enjoy.
Sure. So the one that I'm currently reading is the one from the selection series. So this is a YA book by Kiara Cass. And I'll just read a couple paragraphs from the first chapter. This time we were in the great room enduring another etiquette lesson when bricks came flying through the window. Elise immediately hit the ground and started crawling for the side door, whimpering as she went. Celeste let out a high-pitched scream and bolted toward the back of the room, barely escaping a shower of glass. Chris grabbed my arm, pulling me, and I broke into a run alongside her as we made our way to the exit. "Hurry, ladies," Sylvia cried. Within seconds, the guards had lined up at the windows and were firing, and the bursts of sound echoed in my ears as we fled. Whether they came with guns or stones, anyone showing the smallest level of aggression within sight of the palace would die. There was no more patience left for these attacks.
And that's an interesting passage. I can see how it definitely is. It has those young adult themes of you know, having the, you can tell there's an enemy. I don't know what it is right now, but you can tell that they're afraid. That seems like it's something that's very traditional in young adult literature. Seeing kids who come together or young people who come together against an outside force. And you can see how life lessons are definitely introduced in these books. They're teaching kids how to deal with situations.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. There's a lot of life lessons to be had in young adult literature. And I think, like with the dystopian genre, like with this book, the way they introduce these life topics, you know, is really interesting, and it grabs the reader's attention.
And we'd love to hear from you, listeners. If you enjoy reading young adult literature or children's literature, or have kids who do, give us a call, local in Homer, 235-7721, or toll-free 1-800-979-5224, and tell us what's in your book bag. One of the series that I used to love reading as a kid was Susan Cooper's The Dark is Rising series. And I feel like when I was younger, there were a lot of fantasy series that were out there in Arthurian novels. And I think that those are still very popular, but I wonder if things changed after Harry Potter. How do you see Harry Potter changing this world of children's literature?
Oh, Harry Potter was such a big deal. You know, you are right. Fantasy books are still popular, but it's kind of hard for children sometimes to look past the Harry Potter series into looking at what else is out there. And actually, in our summer reading program, we're trying to promote one of the activities is to read a science fiction book or a fantasy book. And at first you think, you know, oh gosh, what is out there as far as fantasy, you know, besides Harry Potter? And there are quite a few out there, and it's been fun trying to get children to read some of these other fantasy books that are out there. But, you know, as far as Harry Potter, it gave kids an interest in, you know, magic or wizardry, those types of topics. So you're definitely seeing other books come out there that have Harry Potter-like topics in them.
It seems like a lot changed after Harry Potter. It really, for some reason, it seemed like it took people by storm, and it seemed to be the end-all be-all of fantasy in the same way that I imagine Lord of the Rings was when it came out as well. I mean, there's always these books that just take the world by storm and definitely leave a strong wake behind them. And Harry Potter seems to be that. What other fantasy books do you recommend to kids who don't know anything outside of Harry Potter?
Trying to think of a few right now that we pulled out. I think there's one called Johnny Galaxy that's actually geared towards a little bit younger reader, maybe in the 7 to 10 year age group. But you know, as far as books, anything that has a fantasy topic, such as I think of, you know, elves or you know, a fantasy planet, or, you know, you go to another planet and it's completely different than the Earth, you know, books like that.
I'm also noticing a trend into dark fantasy, and I don't know if this started with Buffy the Vampire Slayer or what, but there's this trend of like Neil Gaiman and also Lemony Snicket, very, 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 just darker fantasy, and it's not quite Harry Potter dark, but it deals with, you know, death and graveyards, and it's yes. it's very Nightmare Before Christmas-esque. Have you noticed that too?
I have. Neil Gaiman has written some excellent books out there. And I think a lot of people would be surprised to know that he wrote Coraline, you know, which was a movie a couple years back. And that's actually considered a juvenile book, not an adult, which I thought was a little bit surprising. You know, besides Coraline, he's written The Graveyard Book, which is about a boy who's raised by ghosts and has somebody who's out to, you know, kill this little boy. So those are very, very dark topics. But readers like those. Middle-aged children like them. It's just something that I think is really starting to catch on. And I wouldn't be surprised if Neil Gaiman is already working on his next book.
I'm wondering why, and I don't know if there's an answer to this, why kids are attracted toward these darker themes. I know you talked about politics, but topics like, you know, death and the grotesque and these disgustingly awful main characters who are oh so lovable at the same time. I'm wondering why that's happening. Do you have any thoughts on that?
You know, it makes me think of the movie Despicable Me, where you have a character that, you know, is so awful, but somehow you can't help but like him. It's just something that I think is coming out in movies and books are picking up on it, or, you know, vice versa. It's a topic out there that people really like, these characters that you really want to hate, you know, like Lemony Snicket's, but you just can't quite hate them enough because they're not quite that bad.
Yeah, and also I've noticed, you know, with the Hunger Games series, it's you don't hate them, but it's hard to really fall in love with any of the characters. So there's also these middle of the road characters that you can be very ambivalent about, and who really change over time. And it seems like these kinds of books perhaps prepare kids for the real world better, I guess. I don't know, than perhaps your typical prince and princess novel. I wonder if they do, because they have much more, for lack of a better word, much more human characters, whether mm-hmm. they're human or not.
I think that's a great observation, you know, as you find out in life that not everything is black and white, that there's a lot of gray areas. And a book like The Hunger Games really has a lot of topics that are presented as a gray area, where there's doesn't seem to be a right or a definitive wrong answer. And I think that's helping, you know, children and young adults prepare for the real world, where you're going to be in a lot of those situations where you really don't know what the right or the wrong answer is.
Tell me about a book that you read when you were younger that's really stayed with you. I imagine that experience has influenced you becoming a children's librarian. So I'd love to hear about something that you really remember that stood out to you as a kid.
Oh, gosh, let's see. I grew up with, my mom was a kindergarten teacher, so we always had a lot of books in the house. Definitely had Dr. Seuss. I still love Dr. Seuss. I mean, who doesn't?
Who doesn't?
Who doesn't? And, you know, it's been really fun to be able to take, you know, that love of Dr. Seuss. I remember, you know, reading that all the time when I was little, and being able to, you know, show kids, you know, there's some out there that haven't been introduced to Dr. Seuss yet, and being able to, you know, read one of his books in story time and, you know, tell him, I remember reading this when I was little, and, you know, can, you know, remember some of the passages. And it just makes it fun to be able to share that with other children.
It really does. And, you know, when I graduated from high school, I know one of my mom's friends gave me Oh, the Places You'll Go as a graduation present. And I imagine that's done quite often, but there was something that just tickled me and got to that kid inside of me and made me very excited when I saw that.
Yeah.
There's kids' books. This is why I've always been fascinated with them. They're not just applicable to kids in a way that adult books often don't cross those lines between young people and older people. I find that children's literature and young adult literature, it really has quite a magical way of always relating to people, because everyone can remember being a child and what they thought at that time.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's fun to see the parents that you know, come in with their children and, you know, they pick out a book, you know, oh, I remember reading this when I was little, and they want to read it to their children now. And there's a lot of life lessons in these children's books that, you know, will stay with you from when you're little to when you're an adult.
And we've only got a few minutes left here, so I'd love to hear from you. For kids who might be ambivalent about reading, or for parents who are having trouble getting their kids to read, what advice would you give to them?
Be as encouraging as possible. And, you know, if they're struggling reading, you know, help them along, help them to, you know, figure out what that word is. And just lots of encouragement, I think, is the key to helping those reluctant readers.
All right. Well, thank you so much. That was Rebecca Barnick. She's the children's librarian at the Kenai Community Library. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
And again, you have been tuned to The Coffee Table on KBBI AM 890 Homer and KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. You can find more information at kenailibrary.org, City of Homer, ak.gov/library, or stop by your local library. I'm Shady Grove Oliver. Thanks so much for tuning in. Have a great day. It's 10 o'clock.